Hi everyone, I'm Liam, and welcome to another episode of Exploring the NQS, a bonus series from the Early Education Show, exclusively for our Patreon supporters. So if you're listening to this, that means you're supporting the main show, which means I want to start, as always, with a big thank you. The main show will always be free, but those of you who choose to actually support us financially really, really help us out. In Exploring the NQS, in this series, I take a look at one element of the National Quality Standard, one at a time, until I've covered all 40, and we're getting pretty close to all 40. My background is as an early childhood educator and teacher, centre director, and I currently oversee professional learning and development for Northside Community Service, a not-for-profit early education provider based in Canberra. All right, let's get started. This week, we're continuing through Quality Area 5 with Element 5.2.2, Self-Regulation. It's part of Quality Area 5, Relationships with Children, and it's the second and final element of Standard 5.2, Relationships Between Children. The description for this element is, each child is supported to regulate their own behaviour, respond appropriately to the behaviour of others, and communicate effectively to resolve conflicts. Alright, so what's this one all about? This is another big one. All four of the elements in Quality Area 5 have really huge repercussions for the work that's happening in centres. If we had to really summarise and narrow this one down, we could kind of call this the behaviour management element, managing behaviour. We're probably used to hearing that term in the sector quite a lot. It's one of the biggest, I think, challenges that educators face. The first thing to think about is when we're talking about managing behaviour, is that term itself can be quite problematic, and we probably want to think a little bit differently about that. And luckily, this element helps us with that. So, the self-regulation is really about saying, you know, it isn't our job to come in and control children's behaviour, which is what managing children's behaviour can sound like. What this element is telling us is that everything kind of comes back to giving children the skills to manage their own behaviour. So our role as educators isn't to control children's behaviour, but to give them those skills, the techniques, the words, the environment, the positive environment with adults around them who are listening and caring and empathetic, giving them those skills, that space to manage their own behaviour. And that's important not just for the work we do every day in our centres, not just for the group of children we have with us. But that's a really important skill that children will take with them. And it's a skill that's particularly important to learn in the first 5 years because it's much harder to learn after that. So this element probably starts with us thinking about this is the behaviour management element, but really it's a lot more than that. And we're going to look at that as I sort of talk through some examples in practice. All right. So let's now have a think about sort of what this element can look like or some different perspectives on this element in practice. The first one that I want to talk about, and again, this is another one of those elements I kind of wish I had an hour to talk about, but I'm going to try and break down just a few key things to think about for this element. The first one is really the kind of the importance of educators' role modelling practice. I've talked about this quite a bit in Quality Area 5, but I do think it's a really important way to think about this element, is that we have to start with ourselves. Like I said, in the summary section, you know, we can't control children's behaviour, we can only sort of focus on the work we do with young children. So role modelling is really important. Particularly for this element, self-regulation, this is really important when we think about the common struggles that children will face in this area. So if maybe, you know, a finite number of resources, so, you know, really a basic and obvious example, there might be three of a particular toy that five children want. So self-regulation is a hugely important skill for children here, as two children may have to wait, or they'll have to work together as a group to work out how that can be shared. What's important to remember at a really basic level is that sometimes we can fall into the trap of, because we're adults and we've been through our childhoods and we've been through our early childhood experience, is that we can expect children to just be able to do this, that it should be something that's already in their toolkit. It's really important to remember it's not. They're learning, particularly in the first 5 years. All of these skills are things that they learn by observing the environment around them, by learning from the people around them, and as they engage in groups, which is why early childhood settings are really important, because they give these great laboratories for social experiments for children, where they can learn how to engage in particular groups. That's why there's a huge benefit to the work we do. But in terms of our role of educators, and I'm going to talk a bit about this in sort of point two as well, we really need to be demonstrating to children how we engage with not just with our colleagues. I talked a bit about that last week in Element 5.2.1. But when we're with groups of children, we really want to be demonstrating, role modeling, providing guidance for children on how to engage in groups. Where children are stressed and frustrated, it's really important that we aren't, you know, coming in and being really harsh and demanding particular behaviours. It's that we talk through what's happened and we support children to give them options for different ways to behave. And that probably leads a little bit into my second point here, which is sort of separate to that role modelling and demonstrating, which is hugely important. It's just kind of as educators being really specific about teaching these skills. I think sometimes we can fall into the trap of thinking that these skills are kind of separate from early education practice. When we think about early education practice, we may think about things like literacy and numeracy, saying our names, counting, building blocks, doing those kind of things. And that's really understandable. That's been the dominant mode of early education for a really long period of time. What the National Quality Framework and the Early Years Learning Framework is really encouraging us to think about is that these skills, these, you know, what were sometimes called soft skills before, but I never liked that term because it kind of means they're not as important as the other skills. These skills that are about self-regulation, but also things like resilience, you know, how they bounce back from particular things, but obviously we're talking about self-regulation here. These skills are critically important and they're a huge part of the education process, which means that we can't just assume they'll happen because they're in a group setting or because we have, you know, a particular approach to classroom rules or those kind of things. I'm going to be coming back to that point as well. We actually have to be specific about how we do this. And that means either sitting as a team, you know, with the leaders in the center, as well as a classroom team, to think about, you know, what are we actually doing on a day-to-day basis that is planned, that is actually supporting these skills to be developed. It's really important. The way I sort of think about this, or the way I talk about it with educators, is we need to be doing more talking before than after. What I mean by that is usually we talk about self-regulation and behavior after something's happened. So an incident has happened, a child's upset because another child has, you know, harmed them in some way because of a particular thing. We do a lot of talking after that incident. And it is important that that talking does take place, whether it's supporting children to have the discussion between themselves, our own discussions with the individual children, discussions with families, of course, are going to be important. But what we want to create in this self-regulation space is, whereas as educators, we're intentionally doing a lot of talking before an incident takes place. It's very hard to talk to a child when they're already stressed and frustrated. Everyone listening will know that. It's very hard to have those conversations with children when they're already in a heightened state. So what we want to do is have these discussions around the right way to respond to a particular incident, the right way to respond when we're frustrated, when children are in a good space, when they're happy, when they're playing. Another reason why learning through play is so important. We can actually have those discussions then. And it is one of those things that kind of changes practice. It can become quite an awkward thing right at the start. It's something, as humans, we find difficult to talk about human interactions, bizarrely. But if you can make it a part of your teaching toolkit, it can really change the way dynamics happen in your space. So I call this sort of trying to make sure we're doing more talking before than after, trying to, you know, make it, you know, 60-40 or 70-30, and eventually, you know, that we're doing all of our talking prior to incidents, because there's so few incidents, because we do so much talking about it. And again, the segue then into my last point here, which is about we really need to move beyond that concept of, you know, what I would call classroom rules, or it might be, you know, the thing on the wall that says how we engage and interact with each other in the space. Again, it's not to say that that practice is necessarily bad. There are ways that can be used really well. But to me, we really kind of need to move beyond the idea of rules, because rules fundamentally will advantage some children and disadvantage others. And that's a question from the Early Years Learning Framework. For all of our practices, we need to think about who is advantaged and disadvantaged by the way we work. So for children that are already experiencing particular struggles or particular challenges, they're going to find it a lot more difficult to adhere to those classroom rules, which means they're at risk of, you know, being ostracized by the community of children around them, or just experiencing more challenges and being, you know, in trouble, in inverted commas, more often. It's important to remember from these first 5 years is that, again, we want to be careful we're not punishing children for things that they're just incapable of doing at this stage, and they need teaching and guidance. So what I try and talk about, and I should say, this is even the case where, you know, we sit down as a group and come up with these rules together as children, as a group of children and educators. I think sometimes we think, you know, I've kind of ticked all the boxes there. Children have been involved. it's still an adult and educator-led process. And again, which are the children who are doing well and able to follow those rules? They may be the ones coming up with those rules and discussions. So I talk about, you know, trying to move beyond the idea of classroom rules to a classroom culture of rights and responsibilities. So rights and responsibilities. The children have the right to be treated a certain way, which means that they have a responsibility to treat people a certain way. You know, as a really simple example. So having that discussion, if that's a discussion you want to have, obviously particularly in a preschool classroom, you can do this with toddlers as well. My recommendation is moving a bit beyond the idea of rules and talking about rights and responsibilities. Less classroom rules, more classroom culture. Because it's important to remember, if we go back to the description for this element, each child is supported to regulate their own behavior. So that means one approach isn't going to work. Having five classroom rules on the wall can't work for each child. Each child's going to need something a little bit different. The majority of children you might be able to work with in the same way. There'll be some children that just need additional support. So that's really important to remember. Each child is supported to regulate their own behavior. All right, let's have some suggestions for nominated supervisors. The first thing I would think here is, if you're leading a team, similar, and I've talked about this in kind of different ways throughout all of the elements of Quality Area 5, is that we need to really approach this as a specific skill for educators. I think sometimes, just as we think sometimes with children, that this is just something they'll learn or they should know already, or we need to focus more on ABCs and 1-2-3s. As with educators, we kind of, I think, sometimes think we've hired an educator, they kind of just should know how to do this stuff. We don't need to talk about it much, but it's actually it's the same as any other skill. It's the same as any other teaching practice. We need to make sure we're highlighting it. And I'd argue, actually, this one needs to be highlighted a bit more, because I think we would all probably agree that, you know, supporting and positive behavior, or behavior management, if we want to use that old term, is something that really causes a lot of stress in the sector. It's probably one of the biggest issues facing the sector. When I talk with educators, the two biggest issues I hear are documentation and children's behavior. So we actually need to treat it as such. It's a big issue facing the sector, and it's a specific skill that we can't assume everyone is coming in knowing. And the other thing is, people may be coming in but with very different ideas of how to do that. And it's important that as a team, as the leader of your team, as a nominated supervisor, that you're having a shared approach to how that's done. So if we're treating it as a specific skill that needs a specific approach, that means we're thinking about formal professional development, internally or externally, giving educators access to readings, to videos, all those different kind of things, but just devoting time to it. All those are different ways of saying we need to devote time to it. Talk about it in staff meetings. Don't have it as this hidden topic that we don't talk about. And particularly give feedback to educators when you see them supporting children to self-regulate and supporting positive behavior. Where it's critical feedback, doing that respectfully. People are trying their best. It's a very difficult skill. But particularly highlighting positive approaches. Where is this working really well, and how can that be shared with the team? The second thing I would have here for nominated supervisors is a bit of additional guidance. I'd really be thinking about exploring a trauma-informed approach to supporting children to self-regulate. I don't have time to go into that here, as I see the seconds ticking away, but I'm going to do an early education show reference here, which I don't think I've done too much in this series. But if you go and listen to episodes 35 and 36 of the early education show, we have a pretty in-depth exploration of trauma-informed practice. But what's amazing about trauma-informed practice is that it will particularly help children coming to you from disadvantaged or vulnerable situations. But the approaches to working with children who are experiencing trauma actually work for all children. And it's about listening and engaging with children and supporting them to feel safe in the space they're in. Children who feel safe and supported don't have the need for as negative behavior as often. And that's a kind of the classroom culture thing we're talking about. So thinking about trauma-informed practice is a recommendation I'd make to any nominated supervisor. All right, let's have a quick think about the quality improvement plan. Again, these ones are a bit tricky because it's very service specific, but what I would be doing was, what I would be suggesting for the quality improvement plan would be, number one, all classrooms have specific intentional teaching strategies in place to support developing self-regulation. So this is just about that idea that we talked about in the nominated supervisor section. We're calling out the need for specific strategies. We take this seriously as an early education practice. And number two would be, all educators are supported to improve their skills in supporting self-regulation skills for children. So that's the idea that we're going to really focus on professional development for the team and have this as something that's supporting educators as they're working to support children. All right. Somehow just, I think, managed to tick over 15 minutes here. This is a really big topic and a really big challenge for the sector. Again, episodes 35 and 36, I'd really recommend at the Early Education Show. I had a great chat with psychologist Dr. Beth McGregor, who has some really amazing insights into this space. But find out more. Treat this as a skill that you want you and your team to develop. And that's it for Quality Area 5. We're now through more than half of the national quality standards. So next week I'll be back with an overview episode of Quality Area 5. I'm really looking forward to thinking about this as one big piece. And then we'll be starting on only two quality areas left. We'll be starting on Quality Area 6, collaborative partnerships with families and communities. So until we're back for the overview episode next week, it's goodbye from me.